The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yes, we have Tralise Lister and lecturer in law at the Munster Technology University, Miriam McGillicuddy, with us. Miriam, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us again this month.
Good morning, Gerry, and good morning, listeners. Not too bad a day out this morning now.
Certainly, hopefully it stays that way. We're going to start with a huge number of leftover queries that we had from last time, Miriam. If you have any questions for her, get in on the programme and any of our numbers this morning. Remember, we're still having, the world is still having problems with WhatsApp, so text would be the way to go in relation to it. If you have a view for us on that, get in touch with us on the programme. Actually, WhatsApp is actually back up and running, I'm told now, so the outage is gone. So there you go. If you have a view for us on that, get in touch with us on the programme. We're going to start with a query this morning about squatters' rights. Are they still there or long gone? A listener wants to know, Miriam.
Yeah, they're still there and still alive and well and living in Ireland. And the adverse possession, as it's known as, is these are applications to the land registry usually to get title on property. And people get them by exercising rights against the original owner of the land for a certain period of time, traditionally 12 years. If it's public land, it's longer, it's more like 30 years. But it involves an application to the land registry setting out one's acts of ownership on the land and the use one has put it over the past 12 years, basically, in the normal application. And there's two different types of applications. One would be where the land was never registered, and that's a more expensive application, costing €500 in land registry fees. And then the other one is on land that's registered already, which would be €130. But one has to set out a long history of the property and, you know, set out what one has done with it over the years, like planting, using it for animals, maybe having used a house on it, having occupied a house, and the acts of ownership. Obviously, if somebody has been paying local property tax or rates, that would all go towards their adverse possession or squatter's title application. So the more one has in terms of history and acts of ownership, the better in making this application to the land registry. So it's a long affidavit setting out full history of the land.
Okay. Will it always be with us?
I think so. It's very much like a lot of our land may not have, it may have gone down through the generations and no one bothered with sorting out the title. So for those properties, adverse possession is essential. It's a way of kind of cleaning up the title, as it were, and getting a good title to the land registry. You see, for example, Gerry, you might have a situation whereby great-granddad went off to America and left the land behind, maybe with some of the younger people on it. And maybe they gradually all emigrated, leaving one behind. And he then died, handed it on to somebody else physically, but nothing was done on paper. And that's where it's very useful. Rather than trying to get grants of probate back over 100 years, you can actually just make an application directly to the land registry for squatter's title based on the 12 years possession. So it serves a purpose
in a good way.
In a good way, and it's very handy for families trying to sort out a title that would be impossible to put together. But they can do it by simply on the basis of the last 12 years occupation. Well, setting out the long history before that as well, obviously.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Okay. Another query coming in here. What's the best age to make a will at? And if you make it when you're relatively young, can it be changed as you get older if you want?
Yes, and I suppose anyone over 18 can make a will, and we'd be encouraging, I suppose, people to get into the habit early, because you can change it at any time before you die. And, you know, usually you'd revise it every 5 or 10 years, depending on the change of circumstances. But I think it's we'd be advising people to try and get at it early, as it were, because, you know, everybody now has something. And even if you haven't got physical assets like a house or money in a bank account, you might have a life policy which you can, leave behind for the benefit of your next of kin. The other thing is, of course, when people have children, it's very important that they leave a will appointing guardians. You know, if something happens, both of them, one or both of them, that they have appointed guardians to look after the infant children, and also put trustees in charge of any money that they have. And again, if you've no actual physical assets, a life policy would be, you could put in place a life policy for the benefit of the children. And as I say, it can be changed at any time before death, as many times as you want. I remember hearing of one person who used to come into the town every week to the market and used to change their will every week as well. So, depending on who's flavour of the month.
That week.
But, you can change. It is a good idea to have in place. It makes things much easier for people left behind. There's a clear map, and it makes it much easier to extract the validation of the estate to the probate office, because you can get a grant of probate based on the will. So it's kind of leaving clear directions for family and next of kin.
Very good.
Anyone over 18, basically.
Can do it. Okay. Yeah. A listener gets in touch and asks the question, what's the 7-year rule in planning law?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, because I had always thought like it's the 7-year rule, and it's basically that once something is in situ, if you've put a new development or a change on the property and it's in place for over 7 years, that there's a rule there that the local authority can't go in and enforce you to take it down or change it or get rid of it or whatever. And that, strictly speaking, is the situation. But interestingly enough, it varies depending on whether you've originally a planning permission there or not. So, and also there's a slight extension to the rule. So it's actually 7 years and 119 days. So there is a bit longer than you think. So if one has 7 years, one is not home and dry yet. There's an extra 119 days on it. And that's been established in case law. And then the other point is, say you got your planning permission and you've your 5 years to build, and then you build what you're building, but you change it as you're going up, and it varies significantly from the original planning you have. The 7 years runs from the end of your planning permission, so literally that extends it to 12 years, and there's 164 days added on there as well. So it's not as clear cut as 7 years, so one has to be careful about that. The other thing is, it doesn't apply to change of use. So if you change the use of a property, like you changed it from residence to commercial, or maybe you'd opened a restaurant in what was previously a factory without applying for change of use, strictly speaking, that enforcement provision, the 7-year rule, doesn't apply to that, and the council could come in relation to enforcement on the change of use. The other thing to remember is that, even though there's a 7-day rule, your property doesn't have valid planning permission. And if you're trying to sell it, it's very awkward then. And that's where it might come a cropper, and one would need to have apply and hope to get retention on the planning changes.
Okay, all right, and that's the way that one works. We have a query in here from a listener. I've been separated from my husband for over 20 years. We never signed any papers or ever went to court or anything like that. Am I in the same position as someone who's legally separated at this stage? Does it happen automatically?
Yeah, very interesting query. No, I mean, the point is that those parties are still legally married, and if one of them died in the morning, they still have succession rights against each other. One has to legally, formally sort it out. Otherwise, even though people might be living separate and apart, they're still married. There's no such thing as kind of common law separation, recognised in Irish law. So it would be important to go about getting that formalised. And it can be done quite easily by a separation agreement. It doesn't have to go to court. One can put in place the provisions by a separation agreement. So it would be important because, say, for example, those people were doing wills, their spouse still has a legal right share in relation to their estate, so they need to be careful around that.
And you're always better to formalise it. If you really are separated, to clean what needs to be cleaned up, even with this amount of passage of time.
Yeah, it is important because, say, for example, one might be living with a new partner, and if one died in the morning, they might have been the people who looked after you and everything for years, and then it's...
They'd have no rights.
They have no rights. So it's not looking after one's nearest and dearest, and would be important to formalise things, particularly in those type of situations. And also, one might want to leave all one's property to one's children rather than the separated spouse. So the freedom to do that is only with a legal separation. So it would be important for clarity for the couple. Now, having said that, if they don't want that to apply, if they want it to apply as if legally they're still married and to have the succession rights, then that's perfectly fine. But otherwise, they'd need to address it.
Okay, and Mary, with that in mind, another query is coming along those lines. What is the difference between being actually divorced or legally separated?
Yeah, I mean, legal separation in Ireland is achieved through, as I said, a separation agreement or a court order. And it gives you most of the, remedies and reliefs or requirements that you need in relation to living separate and apart, except the right to remarry.
Yeah, so you have to be divorced if you want to remarry.
That's the big difference, that one has the right to remarry when one is divorced, and that came in 1996 in Ireland. Before, as I said, you can get legally separated, and a lot of people would prefer that option, just to be legally separated and not go for the divorce.
Yeah.
And that option is there for people as well.
And we've another query here, Miriam, along the lines at another stage here. Mediation has been suggested for myself and my spouse who are separating. How does this work? And can mediation on that, Miriam, can it be defined or can it be used to come up with an agreement that takes care of maintenance if there's children and all those other things, separation of properties, without the need to go to court? Or will you still have to go to court?
Well, I suppose, good point, Jerry, because you can achieve a lot with the mediation agreement. You can put it into a separation agreement format and without going to court, and one has a lot of what one needs in that. The only thing one hasn't got with the separation agreement is a blocking order preventing either party from suing out of each other's estate after their death. And the second thing is the right to remarry. So that's really why one goes to court. But you see, it's much easier to go to court when you have a signed agreement because it's a consent divorce and it goes through very smoothly and with much less cost than if it was a fully contested divorce hearing. And mediation is brilliant. And I suppose the reason, just to clarify, the marriage guidance counselling is where the parties want to remain together.
Yeah.
And they're putting together a plan for that. Mediation is where both parties intend to separate and they want to put together a plan for that. And you sit down with the mediator who's impartial and they help you, to both parties, to reach an agreement. So it leaves the power with the two parties. And it's an excellent way of sorting it out. And we have a great government mediation service, which is substantially free unless you want to give a donation. And it provides an excellent service for couples. There is a bit of a waiting list, but it's the ideal solution to save costs. It's efficient. And once the mediation agreement is done up, each party brings it to their solicitors and they put it into the separation agreement format.
Okay.
Much simpler.
Much simpler is right, and much less hassle and much less grief and much less expense as well. Miriam, listen, we're out of time. We're going to leave it there. My thanks to you again for another great legal lowdown. If you've any other queries or questions for Miriam, get them into us and we'll pass them on to her for this time next month. Thanks, Miriam.
Thanks, listeners.
That's Maureen McGillicuddy there. Oh, it's on the line.